The history of how modern treaties in the Yukon were negotiated and signed are a unique and collaborative story. The following timeline highlights some of the key factors that led to the signing of the Umbrella Final Agreement in 1993 and the settlement of 11 out of 14 land claims self-government agreements. First Nations people have been living in what is now known as the Yukon for time immemorial. The first colonizers started arriving in the Yukon in the 1840s as part of the Hudson's Bay Company. In 1876, the Canadian government passes the Indian Act. This law sets out federal obligations and regulates who is defined as an Indian, as well as the management of Indian band land, monies, and resources. The Indian Act only applies to First Nations.
The Indian Act was a piece of legislation that basically dictated from cradle to grave how your life was going to be, what kind of lands you could live on, what type of support you can get for education or health care, what your hunting rights were. It was just a long list of things. And it also was a process where the colonizers, the government of Canada particularly, kept a significant measure of control over the resources by claiming that they held those interests for you in trust and that they would be the ones that would be the ultimate decision makers.
In 1902, as a result of the gold rush and in the wake of a growing non-Indigenous population, Tahan-Quachan Council Chief Jim Boss wrote to the Government of Canada requesting compensation for his people's loss of lands and hunting grounds.
There was a request by Chief Isaac from Trondak-Wachin as a result of the gold rush in about 1899. They said, no, we're not going to employ the treaty-making practice in the Yukon because we want to keep them as Indians. They're doing fine living off the land. We're not going to make a treaty with them. And then about 3 years later, Chief Jim Boss of Tahan-Quachan also asked about a treaty-making process. And again, the Crown said, no, don't worry. Northwest Mounted Police will take care of your people. And so they basically said, no, no treaty-making.
This represented the first attempted land claims discussions in the Yukon. It wasn't until much later that the Yukon land claims movement was spurred by the creation of the Yukon Native Brotherhood in 1968. The 60s and 70s were a time of great social change around the world and marked the beginning of a new era for First Nations in Canada. In 1973, Elijah Smith and Yukon First Nation leaders presented Together Today for Our Children Tomorrow to Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau. This document marked the beginning of a long and arduous struggle for a land claim settlement for Yukon First Nations.
Our manifesto for Yukon First Nations, which was called Together Today for Our Children Tomorrow, tabled to the Prime Minister and the Government of Canada in 1972. It outlined the horrific conditions of Indian people in the territory at the time. It was just terrible. In a modern society as Canada was at that time, its relationship with Indigenous people was just really pitiful.
Also in 1973, the Council for Yukon Indians was created as an offshoot of the Yukon Native Brotherhood to be the negotiating body for the Land Claims Settlement Agreement. After 20 years of negotiating, the Umbrella Final Agreement is signed in 1993 between the Government of Canada, the Council for Yukon Indians, and the Government of Yukon. While the agreement is not a legal document, it represents a political agreement made between the three parties. The Umbrella Final Agreement provides a framework within which each First Nation will create their final agreement.
In very simple terms, the UFA is a non-binding agreement on the First Nations until they get a final agreement. The final agreement is the binding contract that is entrenched in Section 35 of the Constitution Act 1982. So they cannot change. Canada or Yukon or the provinces cannot change this agreement unless it's with your consent.
Also in 1993, Champagne and Ajak First Nations, the First Nation of Nacho Nayak Dunn, Teslin Tlingit Council, and Vundhut Gwich'in First Nation signed their final and self-government agreements.
Modern treaties to me symbolize a relationship, an agreement between Teslin Tlingit Council, my own First Nation, self-governing First Nation, and the Government of Yukon, and the Government of Canada. And it lays out the obligations and rights of us as First Nation citizens in the Yukon, and obligations is laid out in the final agreement that we need to sort of work on together in a relationship. Ultimately, modern treaties mean to me First Nations having control of our direction, making our own decisions about our future, our goals, our people, our land.
You look at what the Wet'suwet'en have been able to do, both business side, but also improvements on education outcomes, on a whole bunch of different areas, also protection of their lands, protection of the wildlife populations, and it really defined the place for, say, my First Nation, the Wet'suwet'en, within the Yukon, but also internationally, when you look at the Arctic Council and a bunch of other organizations and initiatives.
In 1997, Little Sam and Carmack's First Nation and Selkirk First Nation signed their final and self-government agreements.
I was very fortunate to be able to go back to my own community of Little Sam and Carmack's First Nation, where I was asked to be the executive director there to help implement their land claim agreement, which came into being in 1995. I was there to help design the implementation plan and guide the entire community in terms of its administrative, its legislative and executive authorities, as well as mobilize the community towards the implementation of their final agreement.
In 1998, Trondek Wet'suwet'en signs their final and self-government agreements. In 2002, Ta'an Kwachan Council signs their final and self-government agreements. In 2003, the Yukon Environmental and Socioeconomic Assessment Act, YESA, comes into force. This new federal law defines the environmental and socioeconomic assessment process for all projects in the Yukon. The act also created an arm's-length body responsible for carrying out environmental and socioeconomic assessments.
It considers social impacts and cultural impacts, environmental impacts on prop mines. It talks about incorporating both scientific but traditional and local knowledge in assessments. We started the discussions and it took us till 2003 to conclude it. And that's one of the things interesting with modern treaties and self-government agreements is timelines that are set in some cases are met, but in a lot of cases take longer.
Also in 2003, Kluane First Nation signs their final and self-government agreements. In 2005, Kwanlin Dun First Nation and Carcross Tagish First Nation signed their final and self-government agreements.
So there's the final agreements, the self-government agreements, and then the implementation plans for each of the self-governing First Nations. Those implementation plans are basically breaking down every major aspects of the final agreement and the self-government agreement into tasks.
Also in 2005, the Yukon Forum is established to foster reconciliation, develop strong government-to-government relations, and collaborate on shared priorities.
The Yukon Forum, which is a government-to-government forum between Yukon First Nations and the Yukon government, I mean, they meet four times a year to discuss issues of importance, have an action plan, and to prioritize matters that are important to both parties for implementation.
Each final agreement has an implementation plan that identifies what must be done to put the agreement into effect, who will be responsible for which implementation activity, as well as when and how these activities will be undertaken. Work to implement the final agreements is ongoing. Today, Yukon First Nations are at the forefront of Indigenous land claims and self-government in Canada. White River First Nation, Liard First Nation, and Ross River Dene Council continue land claim negotiations.
Modern-day treaties impact, I think, in a positive way, the lives of not just Yukoners and First Nations, but Canadians.
These are very exciting times for Indigenous people. We are reacquiring our place, not only amongst our traditional ways, our beliefs, our practices and customs, but we're actually carving new ground in Canadian Confederation.
11 of 14 First Nation governments have signed land claim agreements. Youth are discussing the way forward and preparing to lead in their nations.
Modern treaties impact the lives of Indigenous youth in many ways. Implementation of the treaties, in my opinion, have provided opportunities in communities where Indigenous youth may not have to face the same challenges that the previous generations have had to. We really will need the youth, not just opinion, but them to drive some of these significant changes. So that to me, that's who's going to be implementing agreements in the future. They're more fearless, and I think that's necessary in order to really tackle some of the challenges we have, but we have so many great opportunities And I think the youth will be the ones to seize those opportunities.